You can find his work for USA Today covering college football and more on a national level. Online, usatoday.com. Excuse me. Visit your local newsstand. Follow along on Twitter. The handle is at George Schroeder. George, good Wednesday to you. How are things?
Doing well. How are you?
All right. No doubt, maybe the biggest story in sports right now is what's taking place at ESPN. Some incredibly familiar names who, in my opinion, do great work and actually elevate the industry. We were just talking about the names. I know a lot of these folks you've probably known for years. But just safe to say that right now, man, this is a great way to earn a living, but it can be cold-hearted.
Yeah, it's a tough day in the journalism, sports journalism business for sure, obviously. And, you know, the thing about it is for a whole lot of people over the last 20 years, getting to ESPN was sort of seen as the pinnacle, and for a whole lot of people. And now you see ESPN is not immune to the same market forces that a whole lot of other journalism organizations have been buffeted by over the last, couple of decades. And so, that's sort of the explanation, the macro explanation. The hard part is it's a bunch of real people losing their jobs, most of whom do a fantastic job, and, a bunch of whom I know. And so it's a tough day.
Yeah, you hear about this changing landscape while many still pick up the newspaper or read a specific publication, even online, turn on the TV, turn on the radio. Obviously, younger people have more of an a la carte approach to I want this, and they could kind of target what they want, use their devices. So is this a case of it? Sure, it's brutal, but right now especially, this industry has to adjust to a constant period of flux.
Well, I think so. I mean, they're different industries. The newspaper industry, which I've been, spent my career in, has gone through these kinds of things, for the last couple of decades. This is new to the TV industry, which, for a lot of people thought for a long time that sort of live TV sports was essentially kind of recession-proof, I guess.
Right.
Better term. And I think it may well still be that. The problem is, they paid a ton of money for the rights to those live TV events. And there is at least a phenomenon now where people are beginning to cut the cord for cable and consuming things in different ways. We all watch now on our phone, we do different things and stuff like that. And the trend lines are bad, much like they were a couple of decades ago for newspapers. And so this is the first time we've really seen this from on a large scale from a TV network that had invested so heavily in the idea that live sports was going to be the ticket. And so they're going through a difference in how things get delivered, the same way newspapers went through it when the internet came around. And it's just a tough deal. There'll be a shakeout and there'll be a new world, and nobody probably really knows what that'll be in terms of how are we going to consume our live TV sports? I don't think we know that 20 years from now, 10 years from now.
No.
But it's definitely caused a change of philosophy at ESPN because they can see the trend lines going the wrong way in terms of, profits and losses at some point.
No, it's a scary day. I feel bad for so many of these people who, like I say, sometimes in the effort to fill our 24/7, 365 desire, it's not always with the best quality of work and, a lot of screamers and yellers and look at me and I'll do anything for clicks. But you hear names from some of these people, be it Jason Stark and Ted Miller and, some of the other folk. I mean, I've looked at most of them as people who've actually raised the quality of the industry.
Sure.
And I guess that's where my concern mostly is.
Well, no question. And look, a lot of those guys are going to land on their feet very soon places, although it's a tough market. It's not like there's a ton of options available, but there are some very quality people there, and some of them will find very quickly some nice landing spots. Just specific to your listeners, Ted Miller has been perhaps the authority on the Pac-12 for about nine years now. Before that, was a very fine columnist for the old Seattle PI. He jumped to ESPN before the PI went away. And then Chantel Jennings, who's done a tremendous job over the last few years since moving to the Pacific Northwest. And you know, it's terrible to say, you know, those guys are now looking for jobs today. It's just a horrible day.
We're talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. In the midst of all this, tomorrow's the NFL Draft, one of the original made-for-TV events. You know, I've noticed something from you to your colleagues that I've gotten to know at various outlets, those who primarily cover college football, well, I'd be accurate in saying you might throw an eye, but you don't become one of these draftniks, more a casual observer.
Yeah, not unless you're assigned to do it. And I've had friends, Andy Staples of Sports Illustrated, who's been assigned to do mock drafts before and stuff like that. But unless you're assigned to do it, no. And I actually think that's good, because I'm not necessarily trying to cover college football with an eye to who's going to be the best pro because of his measurables. I'm trying to cover college football to see, you know, who wins and what guys are winners and this, that, and the other. And sometimes your quarterback's not going to play in the NFL, but he's a big-time good quarterback. Sometimes your linebackers will step too slow, but he makes a ton of tackles in the Pac-12. And so I've never really paid a ton of attention, other than the fact that obviously some of the very best players are, because they're really, really talented, are going to go high in the draft. I've never really paid a ton of attention to sort of the whole draftnik process. I will, as you said, cast an eye towards the first round, you know, and see where that goes. The other thing that I think is interesting is how players get deconstructed in the months leading up to the draft. We've heard nothing but how all these deficiencies that Deshaun Watson suddenly has, for example. Wouldn't stun me if he turns out to be a pretty darn good NFL quarterback. He was a pretty good college quarterback. And then the other thing that's funny to me, and you know this because you watch both sports, but what's funny is if you've spent your Saturdays watching college football, it's always interesting in long about February or March before a draft to hear the people who cover the NFL suddenly discover this wonderful talent. Did you watch anything over the last 2 or 3 years in college football? Because, yeah, we knew that guy could play.
No.
It's always funny to me from that sort of angle.
Yeah, we watch them 4 years. They watch 14 minutes of tape, and all of a sudden they're an authority.
It's like, you remember when the zone reads finally came into vogue in the NFL, and they were all sort of explaining it to people, which maybe they have to, because maybe there's this large subset of people who only watch the NFL, but I think a lot of NFL fans also watch college. It was just the analysts who were explaining it to themselves. Like, yeah, we've seen the zone read in college for 15 years now.
No.
You know? It was just kind of funny. Now, obviously, that's sort of gone a little bit out of vogue again, too, but it was just explanations of what this newfangled formation was, which is, you know, or strategy was just crazy.
One day later, from Saturday to Sunday.
Right.
On the much lighter side, I saw Jim Harbaugh in Italy, not running a satellite camp, by the way. Had an audience with Pope Francis, gave him a Michigan helmet. Isn't the rule that the pontiff is obligated to be a Notre Dame fan?
Absolutely, and he still is. But, you know, or the University of Florence or something, right? But, look, it was... There's some it's a fascinating thing that Jim Harbaugh's doing. In fact, almost anything Jim Harbaugh does is fascinating.
Yep.
But it's a fascinating thing he's doing, because on the one hand, it's everything that's sort of wrong with the excess that goes along with college athletics. On the other hand, it's an educational experience that those kids would never get otherwise, and it's kind of cool in that regard. So there's a whole mixed ball of emotions about it. I'm not really outraged one way, about it, but it's just like, yeah, I don't know if this is really good for college football, but how do you not say that this is a great thing for those college football players? One of the things that's interesting, Jim Delaney at the Big Ten has been talking about this forever, and I just never have figured out how you do it, but, you know, the average student has an opportunity sometimes to go study abroad. One of the things Jim Delaney was talking about with this sort of time demands thing on college athletes was they'd love for them to be able to take a semester and go study abroad. Well, if you've been around high-level athletics, you know that's just not going to happen. If the players themselves don't want to do that because they'll be behind in their chosen sport.
Right.
But here's a chance to at least get a quick glimpse of something abroad. It's kind of a cool thing. And it's my understanding that a good portion of the players are going after the sponsored trip to Italy. They're going to do some, kind of on their own in twos and threes trips to various trips that are sort of sponsored by the school that are more like student trips. in Europe and other places. And so it's kind of cool to see that happen.
George, I think you might appreciate this. A good friend of mine just texted me and said, well, being a Jesuit, the Pope technically would cheer for Boston College.
Well, I've thought about Boston College, yeah.
That's pretty funny. We're talking many things with George Schroeder.
He's a Zag, too, right?
Well, they said technically Notre Dame is a Holy Cross order.
Correct, so. But I mean, I think Gonzaga is a Jesuit school. Oh,
right.
He probably was rooting against the Tar Heels.
That's hysterical. Let's get to the NBA. So after Game 4, Russell Westbrook intercepted a question aimed at Steve Adams. And while he should have let Adams answer a valid question about their bench play, I looked at that and I thought a lot of people made too much of it. He didn't go off the deep end, no profanity, didn't walk out, kind of a heat of the moment. Well, what did you make of that whole post-game interaction?
I don't have a problem with what he said. I do have a problem with him intercepting the question for his teammate. In some ways, he made the point.
Right.
The point is that he's the, you know, that when he's not on the floor, they're terrible, is sort of what the point is. And the statistics bore that out throughout the regular season.
Sure.
And certainly throughout the season, throughout the series against the Rockets. And so in some ways he made the point. But here's the deal. Make your go ahead and say what you're going to say after Steven gives whatever answer he's going to give to it. You know, the idea that and no one's trying to split him up, as he said.
Right.
You know, don't try to split us up. And I don't have a problem with him trying to be a leader or anything else. And did it get overblown? Yeah, we live in the era of social media. It certainly did. But I'm just saying, when you intercept a question for your teammate, then, you know, to me, that's not the right way to go about it. Maybe add to what the teammate says after he says it. Then just say, if you just said exactly what you said after your teammate had answered, it would have worked fine.
No, I agree. That's a good take. So OKC had their end of season interviews today. And of course, this year they had to deal with the departure of Kevin Durant. Westbrook had a season for the ages, just the second year under the guidance of Billy Donovan. So from what you've heard and read, you know, they're the team in your backyard. Is the feel around the franchise pretty optimistic, or are they a little concerned moving forward?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on who you're talking with. This spin would be optimistic. There ought to be some concern, and I think there is in some quarters, and this is why. Look, we all know that the roster is sort of deficient. It's kind of what we were just talking about. But they're hamstrung in a lot of ways by the salary cap because they were building around two superstars. So you were building complementary pieces who would fill in around two superstars, role players that would fill in. Suddenly, the dynamics of everything change when you only have one of those two superstars. And so they've been hamstrung, and they're going to continue to be so for a while because they were building the franchise around Durant and Westbrook, not just around one or the other. That said, you can be optimistic, and you can say, yeah, it's a really young roster, and that they're going to get better. But you need a couple other legitimate scoring pieces and some help, frankly, for Westbrook if you want to get back anywhere close to where you were. I think that's a tall order because you had, you know, maybe two of the top five players in the NBA at one point, and now you don't. So I think there's some legitimate reasons for concern because they don't have a lot of room to operate under the cap, and they're going to have to make some moves if they can make them that somehow benefit them. You know, and it's not like the other teams want to get fleeced. So I think there's legitimate concern. There's also clearly some reasons for optimism. And it is a young squad. Some of those players are going to get better. You know, they like some of those guys and think they'll develop. But on the other hand, the way Westbrook had to take over, and it sort of feeds into his instincts and how he likes to play, I think that sort of probably helps stunt some of the growth of some of those young players too.
Yep, and you know the bottom line is they did go out in five against a good, not a great team. George, as always, we appreciate you getting our Wednesday started with your unique insight. Catch what he's up to, usatoday.com, on Twitter, @GeorgeSchroeder. You enjoy the rest of your week, and we look forward to speaking with you next Wednesday.
Well, I appreciate it, Steve. It might be unique. I don't know if it's insight, but I would settle for one or the other.
All right. Well, we're giving you both for now. It's on
All
me.
Right.
Have a good
you.
One, George.